Anyway, my name's Dr. Karen Hacker. I'm a primary care doctor, but I also do research, and I got really interested in the integration of mental health and physical health, mostly driven by the fact that I take care of teenagers, and I had been intensely frustrated by my inability to get my patients seen within the mental health system. So, oh gosh, it's now over 10 years ago, I was working in a health department. I started really thinking about how mental health and public health could work together. So, what I'm going to talk about today, though, is a project that we had been working on with one particular healthcare system that is, we really started working on this in like 2002. Most of our work was at least initially funded by the Maternal Health Bureau, and we got a couple of grants around integrating. And I'm going to, now that we can look back, we're kind of looking at the full assessment of what we actually accomplished. And so I'm going to be reporting today some of the results that we found. And this is definitely, it's a pre and post evaluation. It wasn't something, it wasn't randomized. So just bear that in mind. And it was very participatory in nature. And so I want to thank my collaborators. I don't have any disclosures. We call this the IC3 project, and I'm going to describe it, talk a little bit about our evaluation strategies, and share some of our findings and then some of our lessons learned. So the Integrated Comprehensive Care for Children, which we then named IC3 for short, we were working with a whole variety of partners, both within a healthcare system as well as collaborating mental health agencies, substance abuse agencies, schools, coalitions within our community. And we together developed a vision, and I think it's a nice vision with all of our pieces, but we envisioned a system of care that was culturally sensitive, coordinated, and holistic in its approach. I think everybody can pretty much get behind that as a vision. And as everybody probably knows, I mean, one of the things we deal with in taking care of children who have mental health issues or substance abuse is that care is very uncoordinated, to say the least. You know, they get seen by their pediatricians, they have to go someplace else for their mental health care, it may not even be within the same system, they never seem to get there, there's problems with literally communication back and forth between the providers. So it's a very complex system that's extremely difficult for the providers to negotiate, and just think about how challenging it is for the parents. The system that we were working in is a public institution that is an integrated system of care that includes three hospitals, including inpatient child and adolescent units. There are 12 pediatric and family medicine sites in the community, and they're serving about 90,000 very diverse population. Over 50% of the population is insured by some public insurance. We had a steering committee that met for years, and it involved a whole variety of people, and consistently they came to the table, and you can see the whole variety of people that were involved. I work for the Institute for Community Health in this arena. I was both a primary care provider and a researcher, so I kind of wear multiple hats. When we had started initially doing some screening in two of our pediatric sites, and when we then went forward with this particular project, we expanded what we wanted to do. And so we had a multiplicity of things that we wanted to do, very lofty goals. One of them was, you know, to continue our collaborative steering group, but mainly we really wanted to expand screening. This was again, we started this in 2002. You'll hear about some changes that went on in our state that now have mandated screening within primary care, but at the time, we were way ahead of the curve. We wanted to do that in all of our sites, even though it's an integrated system. Every site is every site, and they don't all do things exactly the same way. We wanted to provide models of integrated care, and so, you know, there's a lot of work out there on different models, and we were looking at multiple levels. We didn't just want to do screening. We wanted to include co-location. We didn't want to just do co-location. We wanted to include interdisciplinary practice. We wanted to include technical assistance from our departments that were serving mental health needs and our primary care departments. And we wanted to develop information technology that allowed us to share information back and forth. One of the things that's really challenging with the movement towards electronic medical records, ironically, is that they actually tend to coalesce systems, but if you're outside of the system, it actually makes it harder to communicate internally. You actually have to scramble information, and you do not have access to the medical record. And then we really wanted to engage consumers, and finally we wanted to evaluate whether we made any progress. So the activities that were involved, and that, you know, we could talk mostly just about the intervention. I was really going to focus more on the evaluation. But we did things like meetings. We did end up implementing screening across all of the sites. And we started with a screening tool, which is called the Pediatric Symptom Checklist, which was only really for 4-year-olds to 18-year-olds. And then later we added something called the PEDS, which is Francis Glasgow's tool, which we used for the younger population, and the PHQ-9 for depression, which we used for the older population. We did a lot of training over the course of this period of time, and we did co-locate social workers in our largest pediatric practices. Fortunately, because of the dollars that we had, they were allocated at different levels in terms of the practices. We developed an electronic referral system, and we did a lot of parent navigator training. These are just a list of all the different kind of trainings we did over the course. One thing I did want to mention, though, that we started out with, and I'm not even sure if it's on here, is our primary care docs were very reticent initially to use mental health diagnoses in their primary care visits, and they were under the false, it turns out, concept that they could not, that if they did, they would not actually get reimbursement. So the first thing we did is we went back to see any time in the past when a doc had used a mental health diagnosis in primary care, found out all of them had actually been reimbursed. And we had to do a training to convince people that, in fact, it was okay to use these diagnoses. Our evaluation was a very long project, really over a course of almost 7 years. We used a lot of mixed methods. Some worked, some didn't work. We did both qualitative and quantitative kind of methods. And some of the major outcomes that we were looking at were screening rates, the use of the mental health codes, as I mentioned, by our PCPs. We looked at referral rates, referral completion rates, and then we did a lot of qualitative work looking at sort of a triangulation of perspectives, provider, parent, and we also talked to those providers who were co-located with primary care providers. And these were a variety of tools that we used through the process. Now, while this project was going on, we had a very interesting thing happen in Massachusetts, and you probably are aware of it from Missouri, and that is that there was a lawsuit, and it was initially called the Rosie D. versus Romney lawsuit, later to be changed the Rosie D. versus Patrick lawsuit. And this was a class action lawsuit that was brought by a group of parents and on behalf of their children who had severe emotional disturbances. And basically the message was, the state needs to take care of these children closer to home in their communities, as opposed to hospitalizing them very far away. And after quite a number of years, it was actually decided in favor of the plaintiffs. And this has now in Massachusetts launched a huge initiative, which is called the Children's Behavioral Health Initiative. One component of which is mandated screening for the Medicaid population using particular tools. It turned out, and I'd been very involved in this, that the tools we were using were part of the mandated tools, so we were in good shape. But obviously this had a big impact on how quickly we got screening adopted. So to date, using the Pediatric Symptom Checklist, we have screened over 10,000 children. We are running at a rate of about 8%, what's sort of above the cut point on the particular tool that I mentioned, the Pediatric Symptom Checklist. And once reimbursement is available, as I mentioned, it was much easier to move things forward. So this kind of gives you a flavor for how the sites began to adjust to screening. And you'll notice that there's a big dip. That was the first site we started with, and that big dip represents a change to an electronic medical record, which is a whole, like I said, another story. We could talk about that, but be prepared, guys. When you move to electronic medical records, there's a lot of changes that go on. So once they had been doing great, dropped, but then you can see that folks began to screen, and it took a while. It really took a while to integrate this into practice. This was not an easy thing to do. Once the Rosie D settlement happened and the implementation, things moved a bit faster. Obviously, incentives from revenue is something that a lot of providers are interested in, and we were able to move that along a bit faster. This is the information that we looked at the mental health codes. Now, we only looked at mental health codes that were used at a preventive healthcare visit, which is, by the way, we are only screening at our preventive healthcare visits. So this is all we looked at, but we did see a significant increase in a trend over time in terms of the use of mental health codes. But sadly enough, we did not see an increase in referral completion. So this is sort of our next area of interest. Despite having co-located care, despite having our child psychiatry department be available for technical assistance and on phone, despite having internal ability to do referrals, we still are not successful at getting our families who are referred to the mental health providers. And there's a lot of work that we're now doing to try to figure that piece out and why that is happening, but this was definitely one of the things that we were quite disappointed. We even looked at the difference between the referral completion at the co-located sites versus referral completion at the child psych department, which is slightly far away. We did not see an increase in the sites that were co-located. I'm going fairly quickly through this, but just to give you some sense of some of the qualitative data that we collected, actually this is quantitative, we did look at the provider perspectives, and what you can see here is the three areas where we saw an increase in terms of trend was people who felt that they were doing a better job handling psychosocial problems for their patients, that their screening process had improved, and that there were now people that they could confer with on a regular basis. But we didn't see any movement in the issue of time, which, by the way, all through this whole project, if you ask providers what the major obstacle to doing this type of work in their practices, it was time. It wasn't even money, it was time. So, I'm sorry, moving to the qualitative perspectives. As I mentioned, we did interviews, and we didn't do a lot of interviews, but we did interviews with a whole variety of stakeholders in this. We looked at the patient's perspectives, we looked at the provider's perspectives, and we talked to the social workers themselves. And just some key things that we found from the patient perspectives. So what we did was we actually did interviews with patients who had been screened, referred, and actually made it to a co-located social worker, because we wanted to understand whether that process was working for them. One of the interesting things was it turned out that the majority of people who were referred admitted that they actually had had problems before, that they actually acknowledged that, you know, either someone had picked up their child earlier or that they'd had some experience with the mental health system, hadn't really taken, and now they were being essentially re-identified as opposed to a first time of identification. And I think that's kind of important, because if you think about screening, you often think about, you know, think about screening for diabetes, right? You do a blood test, you pick up diabetes. Well, with mental health, it's a much longer continuum. And these screening tools, I think, are really acting more as a chance for opportunity for discussion, and not necessarily as a really clear, you score this, you have a mental health problem. And that isn't how they're working in practice. We also found that the patients, however, really appreciated having their primary care docs raise the questions. They trusted them, they had very long-term relationships with them, and that was a key component in their being able to actually access care. And they liked the co-location models, was really convenient, it decreased the stigma, but as I mentioned earlier, it didn't necessarily mean that more patients actually got to those sites. The other thing which we actually ended up looking at as well is it didn't mean that they had more visits, even when the visits were co-located. From the social worker's perspective, they totally acknowledged the fact that by being right there with the pediatricians, that it really improved interdisciplinary care. That they were available when questions were asked, they liked that, they felt it was much better for the patients. But on the other side of the coin, they were chief cook and bottle washer. They were lone gunmen, essentially, in those pediatric clinics without any other accoutrements around them. And in our mental health system, which I think is fairly common, there's a very extensive intake process. If you think about it, family goes to intake, don't go to therapy till you've gone through intake, till you've made it to the next visit. And so by the time you're actually seen for a visit, you're probably whittling it down to a pretty good sample of people who are really going to show up and stick. These guys aren't experiencing that. What they're seeing is the first visit with someone who may have a problem that they're not really identifying as a mental health problem. And as a result, they were doing a lot of work to just inform families about what they were getting into, you know, sort of an educational process. And then from the provider's perspective, and I mentioned this from the quantitative data, but basically time, issues about, you know, what can I really accomplish in a 15, average visit in pediatrics is 15 minutes. What can I accomplish in that? I'm not under global payment yet. I'm still under fee for service. So, you know, you're really getting in there with my productivity. This is a big problem. But in general, I think overall, they did like the they really liked the co-location. I think to be honest, I think in some cases they wouldn't have even considered screening if there wasn't co-location available. So what do we learn? Well, first of all, before I even say this, the great news is the project ended, the money ran out, and our Department of Psychiatry picked up all the co-located social workers, so they're all still in their offices, they're still there. And thank you. I don't know if you guys are believers in opportunity knocks, but along comes the medical home, and everybody's talking about integrated care. So basically, all of this work has essentially been the foundation for us moving towards a medical home. And now, and I just talked to some colleagues who were just at the American Psych, the Child Psych Conference, which was very recently. This is like all they're talking about, which is child psych and its relationship to primary care. So I feel like we kind of arrived at the right point at the right time. The work we've done, I think, really can influence, you know, what are the next steps. We've really toyed with a lot of different types of elements of this model of integrated care, which I think, you know, there's a whole spectrum if you're really interested in the integrated care literature. So I feel like the good news is this stuff is still going on. But, you know, that's I think, the key message here is embed the work in current processes so it's not kind of an offshoot over here. There's lots and lots of barriers to collaboration that we met with. I think even with this trend towards interest in primary care, these disciplines speak completely different languages. You know, bring in public health, that's another language, but, you know, trying to get them to actually see each other as collaborators, and in my case, seeing us as their customers was a very big challenge for us. We also made sure that in this whole process, we had the minimal amount of requirements for the primary care docs. I mean, literally, they don't even have to input the information on their screens into their medical record. They have other people who are able to do that later, scan it in, put that information in. And then we did really think that the patient perspective made a difference because along the way, we had a lot of naysayers. We had a lot of docs who were saying, I don't like this screening tool. My patients don't like it, you know, blah, blah, blah. We did a lot of interviews with patients, and they were like, we think this is great. You know, we wanted, some people were saying, ask us more questions. So I think as it's become part of the drinking water, that there's a lot less concern about that. And finally, the big thing for us, let's face it, was we were influencing policy along the line, all along the way. And the fact that Massachusetts then adopted this mandate, because, you know, if you think about a mental health legal suit, it's not really about primary care. So the fact that they actually incorporated that into that suit and made it a mandate, I think there was a lot of advocacy. We were part of that process. So, and I'm gonna be done in a second here, so finally, in next steps, where are we now, where do we wanna go? So the part that I'm now really interested in is, okay, what can we as primary care providers really do as part of this intervention, and how can we actually improve the uptake, if you wanna think of it that way, for service delivery? Thank you. Thank you.